How do we build back better with communications, with locations, with our networks?
Big questions for a tiny island. It's Tuesday, January 25th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You can find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, diplomacy amid a military buildup. Creatively celebrating Lunar New Year. Not just people are resisting vaccines. Exploring traditional medicines. The business of social media beauty. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Tonga continues to receive aid as residents work to recover from the massive volcanic eruption. But danger still lurks underground as people around the world donate aid. VOA Asia's Jessica Stone discusses this with Suzanne Varis-Lum, president of the East-West Center.
We still don't know if it's over, frankly. There could be other eruptions. There potentially could be other tsunami threats as a result of those eruptions. What do we need to be concerned about going forward for those of us who are looking to be helpful?
You know, I think the long-term impacts, I think it's worthwhile for everyone to look at the long-term impacts of the ash and future potential eruptions on the economic core of their agriculture and water and its impact if solutions are not found on how they can sustain an economy that we might see more migration out of that area. And that's an important point. Also, the psychological impact on, you know, in terms of environment, as the economy is impacted, so will people's livelihoods be impacted, as well as the family unit and the harmony in that unit and the psychological impacts of being under that kind of stress. So I think there are multiple things that we can look at. The other thing that we can look at is as they are building back in recovery, looking at building back better, they have an opportunity now to do that. Looking at things that they need to fix along the coastal areas, things that may be related to other, while this was a geological event, environmental events that could occur, and you know, rising sea levels for a lot of our Pacific Island nations. How do we build back better with communications, with locations, with our networks? And also looking at the impact of, you know, squash, coconuts, bananas, vanilla bean are really their livelihood in terms of economic agriculture. So I think those are things that we can learn and share that information together with different audiences who are impacted or who could be threatened by similar type events.
Tongans lined up for limited money services restored in the Pacific Islands capital as the cleanup continued. Tonga's government said drinking water was the priority, and a national emergency team had already distributed 60,000 liters of water to residents. A desalination plant on a New Zealand naval ship capable of producing 70,000 liters a day is drawing seawater from Tonga's harbor. Residents who had lost homes on outlying islands when the tsunami reaching up to 15 meters crashed over the South Pacific archipelago are being relocated to the main island. Find out more on efforts to help Tonga by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia, Facebook at VOA Asia, and the voanews.com website. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. China flies dozens of warplanes toward Taiwan in latest incursions. China's media freedom record criticized ahead of Beijing Games. Taliban talks in Norway raise a new debate about recognition. UNESCO says world failing to provide quality education for children. Afghan students in United States face uncertain future. You'll find much more on these stories, expanded with videos, photos, and text on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and voanews.com. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Let's continue with VOA Asia. Half a world away from Tonga, shipments of a different nature are being made. The United States began delivering lethal aid to Ukraine after U.S. President Joe Biden recently said that any Russian troop movement into Ukraine would be considered an invasion. President Biden's comments come as Russian President Vladimir Putin stations more than 100,000 troops along Ukraine's border. Russian and U.S. diplomats have so far agreed to keep working to lower tensions. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has more.
The first shipment of lethal aid from the United States arrived in Ukraine after officials from Washington and Moscow on Friday agreed to keep working to ease tensions over concerns of a Russian invasion in the former Soviet Republic. The U.S. Embassy in Kyiv says the shipment contains more than 90,000 kilograms of aid like weapons and ammunition. This all comes as British intelligence warns of Russian plans to install a pro-Russian president in Ukraine, which Moscow denies.
We've given Russia two paths. There's a path of diplomacy and dialogue, one that I engaged in with Foreign Minister Lavrov just last week in Geneva. But there's also a path of its renewed aggression and massive consequences that we have been building now for many weeks. And it's not just us that's saying it. The G7, the world's leading democratic economies, have been clear about that. The European Union's been clear about that. NATO's been clear about that.
Amid rising tensions with the West, Russia's defense ministry published these images Saturday showing Russian, Iranian, and Chinese warships in joint military drills in the Gulf of Oman with a promise of more to come. Meanwhile, U.S. lawmakers are weighing their options to de-escalate rising tensions.
I do think we should take up and pass a bipartisan bill that will show resolve and determination and apply some sanctions now. But the very strongest sanctions, the sorts of sanctions that we use to bring Iran to the table, is something that we should hold out as a deterrent to prevent Putin from taking the last step of invading Ukraine.
Russian fighter jets began flights to Ukraine's neighbor Belarus, where Belarusian officials say they're hosting combat readiness drills.
So far with this administration, we have seen a doctrine of appeasement, and that certainly is not going to deter President Putin and Russia from invading Ukraine. So let's make sure that we are pushing back right now with stiff sanctions, making sure that we are showing Putin we do mean business.
So far, the main sticking point in negotiations between the West and Russia is the Kremlin's insistence that Ukraine never be given entry to NATO, a non-starter for the U.S. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
In just a moment on VOA Asia, observing another Lunar New Year with COVID. Happening now in Asia, New Zealand has imposed mask rules and limited gatherings after a cluster of 9 cases of the Omicron variant showed community transmission from the North to South Islands after a wedding. Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern has canceled her own wedding, saying she was sorry for anyone caught up in a similar scenario. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Thanks for being with us today on VOA Asia. Asian communities around the world are getting ready for Lunar New Year on February 1st. As Mike O'Sullivan reports, the Omicron variant of the coronavirus has put a damper on festivities. But Asian Americans in many U.S. cities are determined to celebrate virtually or with conventional parades.
Some of the usual Lunar New Year parades and festivals in the United States are canceled, as they were last year. But the San Francisco Chinatown Parade resumes after a one-year gap.
We are cautiously optimistic to proceed forward with a live parade. So yeah, we're very excited to actually have a live event this year.
That's good news for a man who leads a lion dance troupe, a traditional form of entertainment.
For us, it's a tradition that we ring in the New Year, just like the American New Year, where all of a sudden all the fireworks go off.
His troupe will take part in the parade this year, vaccinated and masked. It is the year of the tiger and another year of COVID, this time the Omicron variant. And in San Francisco's Chinatown, the largest outside Asia, some plan to delay the usual New Year gatherings.
We talked about it and discussed it and said, we're going to celebrate 6 months later.
The Lunar New Year is usually a busy time for Chinatown businesses and restaurants, but not this year due to the pandemic.
We've had probably 90% cancellations for this period. Usually we've got lots of events.
but his restaurant will stay open, and he expects a surge in takeout orders as families celebrate at home. Supply chain problems and shortages have also had an impact, hurting this family-run business that sells ritual items and decorations from China.
The shipping through the ship, the container, takes a lot longer than usual,
creating shortages of some holiday goods and specialty foods. In Los Angeles Chinatown, people are also ready, and the Chinatown parade is still on track. People pray for better times in the year of the tiger, as one temple prepares to welcome holiday visitors. In Southern California's Little Saigon neighborhood, they are ready to welcome the year of an animal known for bravery and strength, but also its cruelty. Facing another challenging year, a Vietnamese section of Northern Virginia is bustling. But sponsors have canceled a Chinatown parade in the nation's capital, creating a virtual program instead due to COVID. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
With the Beijing Games just 2 weeks away, media rights groups are calling attention to China's record of jailing journalists. In its latest monthly listing of the world's most endangered journalists, the advocacy group One Free Press Coalition, a collective of more than 30 media outlets and rights groups, allots all 10 spots to journalists jailed in China or Hong Kong. Topping the list are Jimmy Lai, the founder of Hong Kong's now-shuttered pro-democracy paper Apple Daily, and Zhang Zhan, a lawyer-turned-reporter who has been in prison since May 2020 for covering the pandemic in Wuhan via YouTube. China has been the leading jailer of journalists for 3 consecutive years, according to data from the New York-based Committee to Protect Journalists. As of December 2021, at least 50 journalists were behind bars for their work, including some imprisoned for their coverage of the pandemic. Still to come on VOA Asia, exporting Chinese traditional remedies.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello online or on your smartphone. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news and great features.
This news from VOA Asia, Omicron is now the dominant variant of the coronavirus in South Korea. Officials said Monday it is spreading quickly. Prime Minister Kim Boo-kyun asked citizens not to travel during the upcoming Lunar New Year holiday. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As we continue with VOA Asia, over 1.2 million people are dying every year from bacterial infections that are resistant to antibiotics. That's according to a new study. That makes multi-resistant bacteria far deadlier than HIV/AIDS or malaria. Henry Ridgewell reports.
Typhoid fever is a growing problem in many developing countries, including in Pakistan, fueled by a strain of the bacterium that is resistant to antibiotics. It can cause a high fever, diarrhea, vomiting, and death. A recent study in Nairobi revealed a dramatic increase in drug-resistant strains. It is just one example of a disease that is making a comeback. The largest multinational study of its kind shows that across the world, an estimated 1.27 million people died directly from infections caused by bacteria resistant to multiple antibiotics.
It is estimated that if we don't find alternatives by 2050, millions of lives will be lost and there will be $100 trillion lost output.
The study, published in The Lancet and led by the University of Washington, analyzed data from 204 countries. Poorer nations are worst hit by antibiotic resistance, especially sub-Saharan Africa and South Asia. Most deaths were caused by respiratory or blood infections. Scientists say the misuse of antibiotics over decades has encouraged microorganisms to evolve into superbugs.
For example, people have viral infections And there were, have been prescribed antibiotics for very many years now. And this, over the years, has made the problem very severe. So the bacteria have become really resistant to these antibiotics.
The World Health Organization has warned that none of the 43 antibiotics in development or recently approved were enough to combat antimicrobial resistance. So what can be done? Sagona, along with scientists around the world, are working on new treatments called phages.
These are viruses that can specifically target bacteria, and they can be used in combination with antibiotics or on their own to clear bacterial infections of multi-resistant strains.
Despite the promising new treatments, scientists say it's vital that existing antibiotics are not overused to help slow down the development of the ever deadlier superbugs. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Making headlines in Asia, people in a district of Beijing, which is home to 2 million residents, were ordered to undergo mass coronavirus testing after a series of virus infections were found in the Chinese capital ahead of the start of the Winter Olympics. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, Beijing has been exporting traditional Chinese medicine around the world, including to Africa. With claims of helping with the COVID-19 pandemic, these herbal medicines are welcomed by some, while others raise concerns about their effectiveness and the lack of regulation. Victoria Amunga reports from Nairobi.
My life now is not that productive, so maybe...
85-year-old Hing Pal Singh is among dozens of patients with daily appointments at the Oriental Chinese Herbal Clinic in Nairobi. Singh has been suffering from spinal problems for 5 years and is now trying treatment at the clinic.
There is a slight difference, but I was telling him that it's only a week now. He says it'll take at least maybe another at least 12 to 15 sessions, and then we see how it goes.
Traditional Chinese medicine is becoming more popular in Africa, according to a 2020 study by Development Reimagined, a Beijing-based international consulting firm. A July article in Beijing's official China Daily said such traditional medicine will boost the Chinese economy, contribute to global health, and prove to be a shot in the arm for China's soft power. Conventional medical doctors such as Sultan Matenechere, though, say patients are overlooking the potential harm that some herbal remedies can cause, especially if used too frequently or at too high a dosage.
They do work in quite a number of circumstances. Now, having said that, our main worry as practitioners, the medical practitioners, is that, the use of herbal medicine is not as regulated as we would want it to be.
Although the safety and effectiveness of traditional Chinese medicine is still debated worldwide, herbal practitioners such as Li Shuang continue to gain popularity among those seeking alternative medication. Li claims some of his patients are benefiting from purported COVID-19 remedies, although there is scant scientific evidence that they can help against the disease.
Many people buy herbal tea to prevent COVID-19. Does the result good?
Environmentalists fear the growth of traditional Chinese medicine will encourage poachers to go after endangered wildlife, such as rhinos and some types of snakes used in making the potions. Daniel Wanjuki, an environmentalist and the lead expert at Kenya's National Environment Management Authority, explains why.
The rhino in Kenya is actually one of the good examples, with people saying that the rhino horn would be used as an aphrodisiac. This has led to almost complete annihilation of the rhino species in Kenya and in Africa in general.
Kenya spends an estimated $2.7 billion each year on healthcare, according to national statistics. Kenyan economist Ken Gichinga says herbal medicine could significantly lower African medical expenses if proven effective.
Africans spend quite a bit of money traveling to countries like us, such as India, the UAE, to get treatment. So if this can provide more natural, more cost-effective healthcare, because cost-effectiveness is a big reason of why people choose different types of healthcare.
In 2021, Kenya's national drug regulator, the Pharmacy and Poisons Board, approved the sale of Chinese herbal health products in the country. Practitioners like Lee hope that more nations will give approval to Chinese herbal medicine in the future. Victoria Amunga for VOA News, Nairobi.
This is Science in a Minute.
A pair of astrobiologists from the universities of Edinburgh and Oxford has written a study that may help in the search for signs of ancient life on Mars. They caution researchers could be fooled by samples that may look like authentic fossil specimens, but are actually created by chemical and not biological means. Scientists have found some evidence that ancient Mars may have once had conditions that could have made it possible for microbial life to exist. Among the goals of NASA's new Perseverance mission is to look for signs of ancient life on the red planet. Study authors say they have identified many of the processes that could produce samples that impersonate simple life forms that may have existed on Mars. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
The quest to look good and a big fish auction are the topics on today's VOA Asia Business Scene with Chris Cascajo.
The lunchtime facelift and other medical aesthetics procedures are booming as a new generation of Chinese consumers grapple with the pressure to look good on social media as well as in person. Microprocedures client Kayla Zhang.
It's not changing my nose or my eyes, which would be an extreme change in my looks. Rather, if you already have good skin, it could help reduce your pores. Or if you have small flaws, you could improve those. So this is not drastic enough to cause appearance anxiety.
Already popular in the West because they are less invasive and more affordable than traditional cosmetic surgery, microprocedures from laser facials and fillers to thread lifts are fast becoming the norm in China's cities, where disposable incomes have jumped in the past decade. The Chinese Association of Plastics and Aesthetics estimates overall the cosmetic industry will grow to $46 billion this year, compared to around $6.5 billion in 2013. Microprocedures are now an expanding segment of that market, while traditional surgeries' growth rates slow, according to data from consulting firm Frost & Sullivan. But a government crackdown looms over the boom. The government has banned industry advertising practices that contribute to appearance anxiety, such as before and after images, and has levied tens of millions of dollars in fines this year over various infractions. The top price paid for a tuna at the first auction of the year at Tokyo's Toyosu Fish Market fell for the third year running, with demand hit by the pandemic. The 16.88 million yen shelled out jointly by a restaurant operator and a wholesaler for the huge bluefin tuna recently was far below the 2019 record of 333.6 million yen. The first tuna auction of the year at Toyosu Market is a closely watched tradition that draws a horde of fish wholesalers every year. Bidders sometimes shell out an enormous amount to win the top-priced tuna, which is seen as bringing good luck, as well as plenty of publicity for the buyer. Last week's top-priced 211-kilogram fish was caught off the northern Aomori region of Japan. Famous for its quality tuna, and went to Michelin-starred sushi restaurant operator Onodera Group and Japanese wholesaler Yamayuki. Hours after the early morning auction, the prize fish was delivered to a restaurant operated by Onodera in Tokyo's upscale Omotesando neighborhood to be publicly sliced and filleted. Sushi enthusiasts gathered outside the upscale Tokyo restaurant to await the tuna, eager for a morsel. 78-year-old Junko Kawabata said she had jumped on the expressway from her home in eastern Tokyo for the chance to taste the top-priced catch. "I just love tuna," she said, proudly displaying a numbered ticket indicating she would be the first customer to be served. "I can't wait to eat a piece of it." For Business Scene, I'm Chris Cascajo.
That's our program for today. You've been listening to VOA Asia. Continue online. You'll find us at Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We thank our team, Service Chief Diane Gao, Keith Lane, Chris Cascajo, and Jessica Stone. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead. Be safe. Be well.